There we go. So Dr. Fielding ended with that interesting note about lack of political will. And one might argue that as long as the argument is around fiscal inefficiency and that our percentage of GDP spending on health care, that it feels a little bit less tangible to the American public. I hope in the next few minutes I'll be able to convey to you that in addition to us wasting a lot of money, we're actually losing our lives as a result of this model of healthcare delivery. I'm going to be talking to you about the results of a report produced by a panel that was jointly sponsored by the National Research Council and the Institute of Medicine. The report was released in January of this year. And if you want more details about this report, by the way, you can just Google Shorter Lives, Poor Health, which is the title of the report, and you'll come to the website for the National Research Council where you'll find the report. You can download it for free. There's issue briefs and also interactive tools for you to look at the data yourself. It's a 400-plus page report, and I've got about 12 minutes to cover it all, so forgive me for racing through. I also, as a physician, feel the need to advise you in advance that you should take antidepressants before this talk begins. No disclosures. So our panel set about the task of looking at the health of Americans relative to our peers, other high-income countries, 16 that we chose that were other large established economies, established democracies that are comparable to the U.S. Although I will say that we also diverted from this protocol at times and looked at developing countries as well, because we often found that their health was better than Americans too in many of the domains that we looked at. And this is another display of the same point that Jonathan was making earlier. This is a graph that plots GDP, percentage of GDP spent on health care and life expectancy on the vertical axis. And for those of you in the back of the room, there's a red circle around the United States. It's an outlier over there on the right. And so what you're seeing is clearly we're spending way more, as Jonathan's bar chart showed. But the important insight here is our life expectancy in this chart is lower than that pack of countries clustered over there on the left. And our panel's interest was in trying to unpack that and discover whether it's just some isolated health metrics like life expectancy that seem to be an area where the U.S. lags, or are there other aspects of health that are also inferior? Our panel was preceded by a panel that issued a report in 2011, also sponsored by the National Research Council. That panel looked at the health of Americans age 50 and older. You may have seen press coverage back in 2011 when that report came out showing that Americans age 50 and older have shorter life expectancy and worse health than people of that age in other countries. But the NIH and Dr. Kaplan's agency at NIH commissioned our panel to explore whether the same pattern existed before age 50, and if so, to start looking at what might be causing this problem. So I'm going to quickly race through what our findings were. What's seen here, and you can't read this from the back of the room for sure, is basically age-specific mortality rates, age-adjusted mortality rates, in the three broad categories that we could think about: non-communicable diseases, communicable diseases, and injuries. And the red bar is the United States, and the gray bars are the other 16 peer countries to which the United States was compared. And what you can see there clearly is that across all three categories, the United States has the highest or near highest mortality rate among those peer countries. When you drill down to look at cause-specific mortality rates, you see findings like this. Again, apologies that it's not legible. You'll be able to look at the reports yourself, but I can just tell you what it's showing you. On the left is a table showing different causes of death. The upper part of the table lists all the causes of death for which the United States has higher mortality rates than the peer countries. The lower part of the table lists the causes of death where the United States has equal or better or lower mortality rates than the other countries. And what you can see, even from the back of the room, is that it's a much longer list in the top of the table than in the bottom. And interestingly, if you actually could read all of those different specific causes of death, what you'd see is there's a huge diversity in the types of health conditions that are listed there. They range from traditional chronic diseases like diabetes and cardiovascular disease, to neuroendocrine disorders, to maternal and child health issues and injuries, a broad class of conditions, all of which the United States death rates are higher than among the peer countries. Shown on the right-hand part of the slide is our life expectancy ranking. What you see is that among males, the U.S. has the lowest life expectancy among the peer countries. Among females, the second lowest life expectancy. This is a chart actually taken from the panel that preceded us, the 2011 report. And what it's showing you, the red dots are the United States. It's showing life expectancy over time for males and females. And it goes back to 1980. So to explain what you're seeing there, if you look on the far left-hand part of the slide, you're seeing that in 1980, male and female life expectancy was somewhere in the middle of the distribution for the high-income countries. But as time has marched on, you see the red dot slipping down to the bottom of the ranking. The more alarming chart is below it, actually. That's showing the probability of surviving to age 50. Again, with males, you see that we started out somewhat in the middle of the distribution and came down to the lowest ranking. But look at females, the lower right-hand graph. Basically, American females have gone off the charts. The probability of a woman surviving to age 50 is much lower if that woman lives in the United States than in the other peer countries. Now, one hypothesis you might have or question you might have is, well, what age group is being affected by this? So we actually calculated life expectancy, and we ranked life expectancy by age group from zero all the way up. And what you see is across every age group, from birth onward up until about age 75, life expectancy for every one of those age groups is lowest or near lowest in the United States. If you make it to age 75, you're in good shape. But up until then, the chances of surviving to the next age group are very low if you live in the United States. So often when people hear figures like this, they say, well, you're comparing the United States to Sweden and Denmark and places that have very, first of all, smaller populations, more homogeneous populations. Here in America, we have a very large population, very racially and ethnically diverse. We have a lot of poverty in this country. It's well documented that minorities and the poor have very worse health outcomes because of our health disparity problem. So maybe what you're seeing here is basically our average being drawn down by those disadvantaged groups, and that's what's causing this potentially spurious finding. So we did several analyses in this report to try to unpack that issue. So for example, this chart that you see here, we reran the numbers just for non-Hispanic whites to take out the African-American issue, and this is what you get. So this is non-Hispanic whites and their life expectancy. Basically the same chart. And I'll point out a couple more examples of this as I go through the slides of where the same U.S. disadvantage is appearing among advantage groups as well. In terms of BMI and obesity, this won't come as any surprise to you, but we lead the world in that area as well. And consequently, in diabetes as well, we have the second highest death rate from diabetes among the high-income countries. Infant mortality, we have higher death rates before age one than other high-income countries. But the disturbing thing is actually this line graph on the left. This has been going on for a long time. For decades, the United States has had a higher infant mortality rate than the other countries. It wasn't always like that, but the lines crossed several decades ago. And quite consistently, the U.S. has had markedly higher infant mortality rates. Other birth outcomes also. It's not just infant mortality. Shown on the bar chart on the upper left-hand part of the slide is our ranking on low birth weight. Below it is the results of a study that came out while our panel was deliberating that looked at more than 100 OECD countries at the prevalence of preterm birth. Our preterm birth rate in the United States is equivalent to sub-Saharan Africa. We have a pervasive problem. And if you look at the right, you'll see that it's not the slide I was looking at, but if you look at our infant mortality rates for highly educated mothers, 16-plus years of education, again, trying to look at the social class issue, you'll find that their infant mortality rates are still higher in the U.S. than among highly educated women in other countries. It's not just birth outcomes where we see a problem. Young children in the United States are in worse health than children in other countries. The probability of a child reaching age 5 is lowest if they are an American child, if they live in the United States. Other assessments of child health by the OECD and UNICEF have consistently marked the U.S. very low on child health rankings, child well-being. An age group that really disturbed our panel was the status of adolescents in the United States. Death rates among adolescents are higher than among adolescents in other countries. We have very high rates of obesity and diabetes among our teens. That probably doesn't come as much surprise. But if you look at morbidity in other categories, you see, again, the same pattern. Teen pregnancy rate. That bar chart on the right is showing you the incidence of teen pregnancies in 2010, the red bar being the United States. Our teens have the highest rate of sexually transmitted infections, the highest rates of HIV infection. Injury mortality, notably from transportation-related injuries, much higher among American teens than among teens in other countries. And again, that line graph on the left is showing you long-term trends. Going back to the 1950s, it's been true that American teenagers are more likely to die on the road than teenagers in other countries. And it won't come to any surprise to this audience that this extends to violent injuries as well. Death rates among teens and young people in their early 20s, noticeably higher in the United States. You see that big peak that occurred some years ago. The good news is that peak has plateaued, but it's still orders of magnitude a difference from the other peer countries, and you can probably guess why that is. The age group 50 and above is the population that's been most heavily studied in these cross-national comparisons because of available data that makes that easier. And to save you time, because there's lots of papers that have been published on this, I just put up a laundry list there of all the different diseases that have been documented to occur with greater prevalence among Americans age 50 and older than among their peers in other high-income countries. So the challenge our panel faced when we turned to the question of what's causing this health disadvantage was that when we thought about the very diverse spectrum of conditions where we've documented the health disadvantage, it actually fell into these 9 very different categories: infant mortality, injuries, adolescent pregnancy, HIV, AIDS, and so forth. You can read this yourself. Imagine yourself on our panel, and you're asked the question, well, what's causing this? It would be nice, actually, if you could say, well, it's obesity, or it's guns, it's the healthcare system, the fact that we don't have health insurance. But if you look, none of those answers fully explains all 9 of those. And that was the dilemma that we faced. We did attempt to comprehensively look at the question of what might be causing this. This is sort of the analytic model that we used. On the right, you see the actual health outcomes that we're concerned about. And we had separate chapters that took up 5 major areas of determinants of health. Right? I should say 4. Health systems, so looking at the quality of our health care and public health system. Secondly, individual behaviors. Is it the way Americans behave that has something to do with this? We looked at socioeconomic conditions in one chapter, and then the physical and social environment in another chapter, both cases trying to see whether there's something different about those conditions in the United States that might explain it. And then finally, the role of policies and social values, which shape all of those things. And time doesn't permit me to tell you all the findings that we had, but just to look at those categories that I just mentioned, I'll just highlight some of the examples where, in our analysis, we looked very systematically at whether those conditions are inferior in the United States relative to the other countries. So for the healthcare system, obvious things on this list that you would be quick to point out: the lack of health insurance coverage and universal access to care, a weaker primary care workforce, problems with coordination and errors, all of which appear to be reported more often in the American healthcare system than in other countries. In terms of individual behaviors, a huge caloric intake statistics in the United States compared to other countries. We lead the world in per capita caloric intake. But also drug use, unsafe sexual practices, particularly among teens. American drivers are less likely to buckle their seatbelts. Motorcyclists are less likely to wear their helmets than motorists in other countries. And obviously, firearm possession is a big difference. The physical and social environment in American cities and rural areas differs in important ways from those in other countries. And in terms of socioeconomic factors, large differences in several of those domains that I'll mention in a minute. I'll skip over the individual behaviors to focus a bit more on the socioeconomic conditions. Income, education, classic social determinants of health received a lot of scrutiny from our panel, and it was very disturbing to uncover what we found there, because the same health disadvantage that we saw when we looked at health statistics in the United States turned up when we looked at socioeconomic conditions in the United States. So, for example, poverty rates in the United States are higher than in other high-income countries, but they've been higher for years, for decades, actually, and the problem is getting worse. Income inequality is higher in the United States. The Gini coefficient is higher in the United States than in other countries, but that's also been getting worse since the 1970s. The U.S. has led the world among developed countries in child poverty. One out of five children in the United States lives in poverty, a higher child poverty rate than other countries, a pattern that has been worsening since 1980. Education, the U.S. used to lead the world in education. The post-World War II generation had, the Americans had the highest rate of college education, and because of that, our seniors are the most educated seniors among high-income countries. But we're falling behind on the education of our young people. So educational attainment statistics on young Americans, mathematics, science proficiency scores, and so forth, are falling behind other high-income countries in many emerging economies as well. As Jonathan mentioned, it's not just secondary and higher education where we're falling short, but preschool education, investments in preschool education, also lagging behind other high-income countries. I'll close by just mentioning that we tried to take a socio-ecological perspective on this and think really upstream about public policies and social values that might help find some common thread behind these various potential contributing factors. Our report talks quite a bit about social values in the United States and how they might be a potential hypothesis for why our conditions are the way they are. But it's also clear, if you just look at some hard numbers on how we spend our money and how we make our investments as a society, that we spend a lot of money on healthcare, as Jonathan already mentioned, and relatively little on social services and social spending compared to those other countries. We were particularly struck during our panel's deliberations by the work of Elizabeth Bradley at Yale University. Her study came out while we were doing our work. Her group looked at the various countries in terms of the ratio between healthcare spending and social spending. What's shown on the cluster diagram on the left is a chart that plots healthcare spending versus social spending, and you'll see the big cluster of countries on the left-hand side of the diagram, which is most of the high-income countries. The outlier to the right, just below the dotted line in the middle, for those of you who can't read the fine print, is us, the United States. So we're an outlier. It's not that we don't have the money for social spending. That's what politicians will tell you. But if you look at Jonathan's bar chart, you'll see we spend way more on health than any other country. We've got plenty of money. It's just that we're spending the vast majority of it on health care. And again, the opportunity costs he referred to is that it's coming out of spending on these other social programs. But the interesting thing is those countries over there on the left-hand side of the dotted line that are spending less on health care and more on the social programs are the ones where they have kids living longer, more likely to reach age 5, lower infant mortality rates, longer life expectancy, lower chronic disease rates among their older adults than Americans. So the notion that that model of investment is not desirable doesn't hold up to the evidence. So I'll pause there so there's time for our next speaker.